NPR is supported by Bockstrup Jewelers, specializing in large diamonds, including fancy yellows and starburst cuts. Bockstrup, the jeweler to watch.
Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. Vice President Al Gore addressed the nation last night pleading for patience in a short speech in which he refuted critics who think he is mining for votes. He is pressing on, he said, because this is America. When votes are cast, we count them. We don't arbitrarily set them aside. Meanwhile, Texas Governor George W. Bush is pressing on with the business of his transition. After the certification of the Florida vote on Sunday, Bush assumed the mantle of president-elect. Although he is doing it without the help of the federal government's General Services Administration, which declined to release its budget or offices until there is a more clear-cut victor in this ongoing election. Well, that sort of victory is likely to come from the courts. Al Gore has centered his challenge to the vote count and certification in the state courts in Florida. George Bush is looking at the U.S. Supreme Court. Meanwhile, two polls now show that more than half of Americans surveyed believe Al Gore should concede. Well, we'll look at that question today and all the latest developments with Sidney Milkus. He's a professor of government and a senior scholar at the Miller Center of Public Affairs at the University of Virginia. He's co-author of the book Presidential Greatness, and he joins us by phone. Professor Milkus, thanks for joining us
today. It's my pleasure.
Well, first of all, let's start off with Al Gore's speech last night. What's your reaction?
Well, it was short.
It sure was.
It was mercifully short. So short, I wonder if a lot of people missed it live, a little bit like Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, you know. The impact may have to come later. I thought in terms of the content, he looked a little bit desperate as he was, I guess that makes sense that he did, because he has an uphill fight right now. And I guess the polls show that opinion is starting to move against him.
What makes you say desperate? What clues did he give off or cues?
Well, I hate to psychologize these things, Catherine, but he seemed in a hurry. His demeanor was not as calm as his supporters may have wanted it to be. There was nothing particularly desperate in the argument he made that every vote should count, but the demeanor really didn't match the kind of high principles that he was trying to articulate in that short address. I would have slowed down a little bit, I think. Settled in a little bit, made the argument a little more slowly, give people a chance to digest it a bit better.
What do you think he had to do in that speech?
Well, I think what he had to do was to persuade the American people that the election is indeed very much in doubt. And just how he would do that, Catherine, is easier said than done. I'm not sure how he could have persuaded the American people of that argument, because to make that argument, he has to persuade people that these questionable ballots, these dimple ballots, and these chads that we've heard so much about, in fact, will bring enough votes to give him Florida and thus the presidency. And that's a difficult argument to make. So he sort of deflected attention away from that argument and made the high-minded argument that every vote counts. And certainly almost every American believes that, but marring that argument somewhat is this controversy over exactly what is a vote in Florida and what is a vote for Al Gore.
What do you think he did accomplish last night?
Well, I think what he may have done is to rally his troops, that is to rally the activist Democrats and the members of Congress, and that's very important. You know, if you think back to the Watergate incident, Nixon finally gave up when he was visited by Republicans, and in particular Barry Goldwater headed a delegation and told him the game was over. And I think one thing that Gore may have accomplished last night was to reinforce the support of people like Tom Daschle and Dick Gephardt, the leaders in the Congress, their support for his continuing the litigation, and I note that they're going to Tallahassee today to rally to show the flag. And so I think that that's not an insignificant accomplishment. But how long he can withstand public opinion moving against him, that's the real problem that he faces right now.
Well, now, who do you think is going to have a bigger say in how this election ends, the partisans or the people?
Well, neither. Right now, Catherine, it looks like the courts are going to have the final say.
Huh.
And whether that'll be the Florida Circuit Court or the Florida Supreme Court or the United States Supreme Court remains very much in play. But, you know, Lincoln warned in 1860 that we should not turn over our elections to an eminent tribunal, to the courts, that elections should be decided in the court of public opinion. But I have real doubts that that's going to be the case in 2000.
You think that this will be decided by the court?
It sure looks that way, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the two-pronged approach here. We've got Gore in the state courts. We've got Bush at the U.S. Supreme Court, both filing challenges. Do the two end games for us. How can this end either way, either through the state courts or the U.S. Supreme Court?
Yeah, well, it could end. I don't know what the timing is in the state courts, but it could end with the state courts refusing to hear challenges on the three counties. It looks like...
And maybe for those, you know, poor benighted souls who don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's still pending as well. I don't know what the timing is yet for the state courts, and I haven't heard anything about when they're likely to render a decision. And first it's got to go to the circuit court, and then it's got to go to the Florida Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds to me, Catherine, like it's going to take longer than the Supreme Court, which is going to hear the case on Friday. And I suppose, although I'm not a lawyer, but I suppose if the Supreme Court rules that the Florida court overstepped its bounds in extending the deadline
so that
the recount could continue and the hand count could continue, if the Supreme Court makes such a ruling, that potentially is an endgame. Although I've read doubts about that in the press this morning, it would seem to me that if the Supreme Court comes forward with that kind of ruling, it would be almost impossible for Al Gore to continue beyond that point. I'm not a lawyer, but I have real doubts. Even though the courts agreed to hear the decision, only four justices have to agree to hear a case. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean the court's going to rule in Governor Bush's favor. And it's very possible that the Supreme Court could refuse to overrule the Florida Supreme Court, in which case we'd have to wait for the Florida courts to make a final decision about Al Gore's suit regarding the three counties, and then the private suit regarding the butterfly ballots.
Okay, and you keep saying three counties. What are we talking about there?
We're talking about Miami-Dade County, where the recount was stopped, and there's some the Gore campaign claims that it was stopped in large part due to pressure by an organized protest. Then there's Palm Beach County. There's two issues here. One is that the Secretary of State, Florida Secretary of State Harris, refused to accept either a partial count at 5 o'clock on Sunday or wait 2 hours for the final count. And then there's the Nassau County, where the Gore campaign is alleging that the county acted improperly in refusing to take account of additional Gore votes that showed up in the recount and went back to the original count, which was in favor of Governor Bush.
Now, if the Supreme Court ruled that way and we had to rely on the Florida Supreme Court, that could take us well past December 12th deadline to elect the electors.
That's a very disconcerting and I think proper thought. And what could happen there is that the state legislature could step in and authorize the Republican slate of delegates. And then we're looking at the what would happen in Washington when the votes are actually counted and whether the joint session of Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate, would indeed accept that verdict by the Florida legislature.
We're talking to Sidney Milkus. He's a professor of government and senior scholar at the Miller Center of Public Affairs at the University of Virginia. We'd like to hear from you as well on what presidential endgame you envision. Now, 6 out of 10 Americans in one survey say that they think it's time for Al Gore to concede. Do you feel that way? We'd like to know. We'd also like to know if you think the people or the partisans are going to have the bigger say in how this ongoing election finally ends, or will it be all in the courtroom. Would you accept a decision that was somehow influenced by the Florida legislature? Lots of questions here. We'd like to know what you think. 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities. It's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Now, you mentioned the prospect of the Florida legislature simply going ahead and electing their slate of Republican electors. Now, Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, and not coincidentally, the brother of George W.
Just like a novel, isn't it?
It is just like a novel.
If you wrote this as a novel, everyone would consider it outlandish.
It's true. Now, he has said that he's told his fellows in the legislature, go slow here. He has fears that there would be a backlash, that the country wouldn't accept a presidency basically anointed by the Florida state legislature.
Yeah, I think he would be in a very difficult situation. I noted that he very quietly signed Secretary of State Harris's certification of Bush as the winner, as his brother, as the winner of Florida, and he was quiet about that. Imagine how uncomfortable he would be about signing a resolution from the state legislature certifying electors pledged to his brother. So that's a very good point, Catherine. He would be in a particularly difficult situation, and it would have to be there would have to be a very, very compelling reason for him to go ahead and sign such a resolution. I'm sure he's hoping against hope that won't happen, that it won't come to that.
Now, you're the co-author of a book called Presidential Greatness.
Uh-huh.
How great can a president be when he's elected in a process like this?
I think it's very, very tough. If you look at most elections that have been so close, and few have been as close as this one has been, but we have had a number of very close contests. Perhaps the most a good example is 1960, where John Kennedy edged out Richard Nixon, and there were some questionable voting practices and counting practices in that election. And we think of Kennedy as an icon. He's considered a great president in today's public opinion, but he really had a very difficult time. And indeed, that's one of the reasons he was going to Texas. The principal reason was because he was concerned about his re-election, the coming re-election fight in 1964, and he was going there to shore up his support. So I think the next president will certainly have an uphill battle to be an effective, let alone a great president.
Let's go to Jennifer in Roseville. Jennifer, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi.
My question was that I think that we should take as long as it needs be to figure out exactly who the president is. If that takes until past the deadline to elect the electors, I think we should do that, because otherwise, how do we know that we got the right person in the office?
Do you want me to?
Yeah, why don't you react to that?
Yeah, I certainly understand that sentiment. If I lived in Florida, I'd sure want to make sure that every single vote was looked at carefully, and make sure that if my Chad was hanging, that a witness did not disqualify me. And you know, if this was a state election or a congressional election, it would be possible to have as long a process as we needed. I note that in the second district in Minnesota, there's a dispute and there's going to be a recount and probably a prolonged process. But we have a running clock in the presidential election.
Why do we have different standards for a presidential
election? Well, it's just because the Constitution and law and federal law sets some deadlines, and we can't at this point make changes in those. So the electors have to be certified by December 12th, and then on January 5th, a joint session of Congress counts those votes. And it would be if Florida's votes are not certified by that point, then we face another difficult issue. That is to say, will those votes not count in the Electoral College tally? In that case, Al Gore would be declared president in all likelihood, because he would have a majority of the Electoral College votes that were counted. And it seems to me, Catherine, that would be a disputed situation as well. So to just go beyond these deadlines and to make an effort to count every disputed ballot, particularly when they're so controversial, whether to count dimples and so forth, I think risks a serious constitutional crisis.
Now, did you think that 2 weeks ago? It's funny that you would use that phrase, constitutional crisis, because there were some pundits who used it right away, and they were sort of slapped on by scholars saying, calm down, we're not there yet. Are you saying that we are approaching that?
I don't know if I want to be that histrionic, but all I'm saying is to your caller, although I understand her sentiment, if we're cavalier about deadlines here, we could set ourselves up for a constitutional crisis. I certainly don't think we're there now. We're still in a situation of peace and prosperity, although there's polarization between the activists of both parties, the American public sort of in the center, and both candidates were sort of in the center. So I wouldn't want to say we're at a constitutional crisis now. I'm just saying that to be indifferent to these deadlines and to try to count every dimple might put us in that position.
Let's go to Jeff in St. Cloud. Jeff, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hey, when I go vote, I vote based on a person, not based on Republican or Democrat. I can't call myself either or because I don't feel right to do that because I look at views either way. But the way I'm looking at this whole thing, and yeah, I voted for Bush because of certain views, but the way I look at this whole thing and is the way Gore is pushing forward with this, to me, he's looking more like a crybaby. I didn't get what I want, and I don't like the rules of the game, and he's trying to change the rules of the game as we're going. And maybe that's something that needs to be done after, you know. Well, the way I look at it is he should back off, let Bush get in. He'd probably look better for himself. One of the polls I seen on a CNN website, 75% of the people that voted in that poll said that Gore should back off. And
I think that number's a little high, actually.
No, actually, I just looked at it yesterday on a CNN website, and it was about 74-75% of the people agreed that Gore should drop it now.
Okay, we've
I think it was something like 60 this morning.
Okay, it was 56% at one point, then it might have nudged up to 60. Regardless, it's more than half, isn't it?
And, you know, the way I look at it is this is something they need to take a look at. Once they put the president in, they can take a look at over the next 4 years before the next election to change some of the laws if they are vague. And also the fact that doesn't Gore realize the more he pushes with this, and you can see the effect in the stock market because they're not sure what's going to go on. It's going up and down, more so down than it is up. If he really cares about the country like he says he cares about it and cares about the American people, then he'd look at all these factors rather than just trying to put himself in and change the rules so he can get himself in.
Well, you know, Jeff makes an important point because not only do Bush voters feel that way, but I saw in the poll this morning, Catherine, that about one-third of the Gore voters, supporters, now believe that he should give up the ghost. You know, I've been saying for a long time before we even got into the hand recount that Al Gore should step forward, although I acknowledge that this is easy for me to say, and take the high road and
you know,
say
let,
that,
let
know,
me just interject
there's,
here.
There's a real doubt about who won this election, but we have an official count that shows I lost, and so I'm going to concede. And I think that would have put, it would have been in his, in the, and that would have been an act of enlightened self-interest because I think it would have made him look very admirable and been good for his future. It certainly would have been good, I think, for the Democratic Party. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, a couple questions. One is, what do you mean by taking the high road?
Well, what I mean by taking the high road is to give up the litigation and to acknowledge that the certified vote shows that George Bush won the Electoral College. And to overturn that would involve trying to count ballots that we just can't definitively count as his votes. It's very unclear what these dimpled ballots mean.
Well, let me put forward an argument here.
Sure,
however,
sure. And I admit that it's very easy for me to say that. And I think I should just say that I think one of the reasons Al Gore has stood so firm is he believes he won this election. He has good reasons for believing that if he did not, he should have won the election.
I was just going to say, he leads in the popular vote.
Uh-huh.
He has strong reason to believe that if the votes were tabulated correctly, he would have, it's a statistical tie as it stands right now. There's lots of evidence that if the votes were counted in a particular way, he would have victory in Florida. He's surrounded by partisans, by people who are telling him, look, voters were intimidated in one county because of their race, voters were confused in another because of a ballot. Doesn't he have a lot of people surrounding him saying that there truly is a principle here?
Yeah, he sure does. He had, and as you said, I think you made a distinction before between activists and public opinion, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And I think certainly the activists surrounding Al Gore are supporting him in his desire to stay firm. But I think the patience of the American people is growing very short. And I think he has reason to believe he should have won this election. You know, I think what really cost him this election is a local Democratic official certified this butterfly ballot. Were it not for that ballot, I think Al Gore would have won this election. But that's a fact of life. And given where we are now, I don't know how much longer he can go on and emerge as a president with a whole lot of authority.
Well, then I'm going to go back to one of my initial questions, which is who really will decide this, the partisans or the polls? Because regardless of what the courts do, you have partisans urging him not to give up the fight. You have Democrats flying down to Florida to rally the troops, but then you balance that against the CNN poll, a USA Today poll. So what's going to be the deciding factor in this constellation?
Yeah, well, I think it's a really important question. It takes us back to the question of a potential constitutional crisis, and we're certainly not there yet. I think the most likely scenario for a constitutional crisis is if somehow Al Gore does manage to get enough votes counted in Florida to win Florida, and thus the presidential election. And those ballots are just controversial enough with dimples and so forth, the kind of ballots that Broward County was willing to count, which gave Vice President Gore a few hundred at least extra, something like 500, I believe it was, extra votes. If he was able to do that, I think that the Republicans would mobilize in the House and the Senate to try to challenge that outcome, and then I think we would face a constitutional crisis, something like we faced in 1876, where ultimately the decision was decided by the Congress just a few days before the presidential inauguration. You know, the polls are showing that Bush supporters are less likely, for better, you know, whether or not it's fair, Bush supporters are less likely to view Al Gore as legitimate winner of this election than Gore supporters are willing to view Governor Bush as the legitimate.
What do you think that reflects?
I think that reflects that Al Gore, and I'm not sure this is all fair, but that he's been fighting an uphill battle from election night. Election night, Florida very late in the evening was finally declared for Governor Bush, and he called Governor Bush to concede, and then things tightened up and he had to call back. I think, Catherine, from that very moment, he's been fighting an uphill battle.
We keep talking about the phrase constitutional crisis.
Yeah.
What exactly do we mean by that?
All I mean by a constitutional crisis is that the outcome of the election will be contested in such a way that ultimately it has to be resolved in the Congress. And every time that's happened in American history, it's polarized the nation and made it very difficult for the president to govern.
We are talking to Sidney Milkus. He's a professor of government and a senior scholar at the Miller Center of Public Affairs at the University of Virginia. He's co-author of the book Presidential Greatness. We'd like to have you join our conversation with him about the latest developments in the presidential election. It's 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities. It's 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're going to turn now to Greta Cunningham. She's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Good morning, Catherine. As you've been discussing, attorneys for Al Gore and George W. Bush are filing briefs with the U.S. Supreme Court today in preparation for Friday's arguments. The GOP is challenging a Florida ruling that permitted ballots to be recounted past a state deadline for submitting election results. In another lawsuit, a Florida court will hear Democratic charges of vote tampering in Seminole County. A hearing is scheduled in Palm Beach County, and briefs regarding that county's butterfly ballot are due in Florida's Supreme Court. The Commerce Department is reporting more evidence today that the economy is still slowing down. The department says orders to American factories for big-ticket manufactured goods were down by 5.5% last month. The Netherlands is becoming the first country to formally legalize euthanasia and doctor-assisted suicide. The measure passed the Dutch parliament today and only needs the approval of the Senate, which is just a formality. Advocates say it's a victory for patient rights. Opponents say it will replace caring with killing. In regional news, a court hearing will be held this afternoon in Buffalo to set the rules for the 2nd Congressional District recount. According to election results certified by the State Canvassing Board, Republican challenger Mark Kennedy defeated incumbent Democratic Congressman David Mingy by 155 votes. Mingy wants a recount. Final results from the recounts aren't expected until mid-December. Kennedy already has been to Washington for freshman orientation. A semi-truck carrying 9,000 gallons of propane rolled over on Interstate 94 on an off-ramp near Monticello early today. The truck driver was airlifted to a Twin Cities hospital. The propane was contained, and the State Patrol believes the rollover shouldn't affect traffic this morning on westbound I-94. The forecast for Minnesota today has a snow advisory for the extreme west central portion of the state today and a winter weather advisory in the southwest today and this evening. The forecast calls for snow today spreading from west to east. The snow mixed with sleet or freezing rain is possible in the southwest, and a rain-snow mixture is possible in the southeast. Highs today generally in the 30s. At this hour, Duluth reports overcast skies and 27, some fog in Rochester, a temperature of 25, and in the Twin Cities, some mist, a temperature of 28 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
Today's programming is made possible by the annual support of listeners like you. You can join online at minnesotapublicradio.org.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Science Museum of Minnesota, featuring a T-Rex named Sue, the world's largest T-Rex fossil, here for limited engagement.
I'm Stephen John. On the next All Things Considered, the continuing battle between Bush and Gore for the White House, the day's other national and international news, plus a conversation with award-winning writer Frederick Bush about how he devises plots for short stories.
I've been writing stories since I was a boy, or telling lies since I was a boy. Check one. And I'm a veteran.
All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW-FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. In the next half of Mid-Morning, a few minutes after 10, we'll be talking about the fast pace by which the English language keeps changing. Well, you know yourself how fast usage can change, how a word can drop in and out of favor. Quick. How many of you were using the word Chad that much a month ago? There you go. We're going to be talking to Joseph Pickett. He's the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary, and to Patricia Hampel. You know her. She's one of our beloved writers here in Minnesota. She's on their usage panel. We'll be talking to them about the quickly changing English language. Make sure you don't miss that. Meanwhile, we're continuing our conversation with Sidney Milkus. He's co-author of the book Presidential Greatness, and he teaches government as a professor there at the University of Virginia. If you'd like to join this conversation, lines are full right now, but just take down the number and then hop on to give us your opinion on this presidential election. 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Let's go to Bob in Osceola. Bob, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yeah, good morning. First of all, I'd like to thank you for taking the call. First, I want to applaud Vice President Al Gore there in his speech last night. I think it's very important that the votes do be counted so we can have some legitimacy to whoever does become the president. And I guess my question is why would George Bush be so opposed to having the recount and adding legitimacy to his supposed presidency here? Particularly when he campaigned all along that he wanted to put things in the hands of the people as opposed to having the government do things. And here he's been going with the government here all along in the court systems and stuff, and he's been trying to keep it out of the hands of the people and in counting the votes and making sure that there is legitimacy. I would think that he would want to add as much legitimacy as possible, not only to settle things amongst the people and get the support of the people behind him, but also the legislature and Congress.
Okay, Professor Milkus?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. And the easy answer is to say he's afraid he's going to lose if all the votes are counted. What complicates that ever so slightly is that so many ballots are hard to count. And some of the canvassing boards are trying to figure out what the intention of the voter is. And you know, I haven't been down there and I haven't looked at these ballots, but figuring out whether these dimple ballots who they're supposed to register a vote for is a very difficult matter. So,
well, regardless of your partisan beliefs, there are people who are legitimately upset that a puckered piece of paper could determine the presidency.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And one wishes, with all this, since we're in the information age, we had a more sophisticated way to register our votes, and certainly next time something like that's going to be, one would hope that something like that's going to be done. But it's easy to say that we would like to have all the votes counted, but I think even some Democrats down there in Florida will tell you it's kind of hard to figure out who some of these votes were are for. And what complicates the thing is around the nation, a lot of people didn't vote for the presidency. And, you know, there was not a lot of excitement about this campaign among a lot of voters. And there was a lot of people who wanted to shout a plague on both your houses. So it's kind of hard to determine whether or not these dimples really represent votes for Al Gore. But I just wanted to say one other thing, that what's bothered me about Bush is his presumption that he's president before all the litigation is finished, because his supporters are too carrying on litigation. They have a suit before the Supreme Court, and I did find it irritating when he, and I'm sure Al Gore supporters found it infuriating, that he claimed the presidency the other night and has begun the transition. I think he should have at least waited. If he's not going to accept the wait till all the votes are counted in Florida, at least should wait till the Supreme Court, which is going to rule because of his suit, has rendered a verdict before claiming the presidency.
How do you think he should have proceeded then with the transition?
I don't think, well, if he's going to proceed with the transition, which I guess is understandable, time is short, he should do it behind the cameras, not in front of the cameras, not you know, wearing a windbreaker, looking like a presidential windbreaker and assuming, grasping the presidency. I think that has, if anything, reinforced Gore and his most ardent supporters that they should play this out as far as they can.
Let's go to Jason in Inver Grove Heights. Jason, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
A lot of it has been said about the CNN polls, and I heard someone say 75%. I think that was too high, but I had also heard and seen 60%, and as far as the American people being tired of Al Gore's efforts. And my thoughts are this. CNN was doing daily tracking of the presidential election, and for the last month had Bush up by as much as 10 points. And now look, and their big fear was that Bush would win the electoral vote, or Bush would win the popular vote, and Gore would win the electoral vote. And now the exact opposite has happened. My faith in those polls, not so much. I don't think that you can really count on them to give you an accurate portrayal of what the American people are thinking, especially the CNN poll that had Al Gore down by so much, and then he ends up winning the popular vote. In my view, if anything, he has a mandate and a responsibility to make sure that he finds out what the exact numbers are in Florida, and with the amount of problems and discrepancies going on with the absentee ballots, with the Chad controversy, with the intimidation of minorities in Seminole County, how could anybody possibly think that there is really a legitimate winner at this point? And I agree with the last caller and what the professor just said. You know, it is very presumptuous of him, and he is legitimately afraid that if all the ballots get counted, he will lose. He wants to finish this as much as possible. If you really thought he was the winner, why doesn't he stick it up to the end?
Okay, thanks, Jason.
I think Jason makes some very, very good points. I appreciate his point about public opinion polls, and I don't think we should be obsessed with them, and I don't think Al Gore should be obsessed with them. I think he is in his right to continue the challenge to a point. I just hope that within about a week's time, that we can get this thing resolved, and if not, then I think he needs to step forward and concede.
You know, listening to the tone.
Can I just make one more quick point?
Of course.
And because Jason also mentioned that Al Gore won the popular vote, and you know, elections are constitutionally decided by the Electoral College, and I think Al Gore has been extremely statesmanlike in acknowledging that. But you know, one thing I wonder, Catherine, is that if George Bush does in fact finally become president, whether or not there will be a strong movement in the Congress. I know Senator Specter has already proposed an initiative to eliminate the Electoral College and to establish a direct popular vote. I think we face a real interesting constitutional debate after this election about whether or not we still want to have the Electoral College determine our presidents rather than a direct popular vote.
Well, now, after that, let's turn to Larry in Minneapolis. Larry, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a couple of three comments. As long as you talked about the Electoral College, I have a simple solution, I think, with a little tweaking to make it work, and that is to allow whoever wins the state, any given state, to get the two senatorial votes in Electoral College. And then whoever wins each congressional district gets those electoral votes. So a person doesn't go in and win in a big city and disenfranchise everybody else in the state. I think that would have solved the problem, because now you wouldn't have so many people bouncing around. And I have two items about statistics. Number one is, it seems to me that I've been hearing anywhere from...
I need you to be quick.
Yeah, 1.6 to 2.0 undervotes across the nation, and Florida is well within that range. The other thing is, on the popular vote, Al Gore won New York City by 300,000 votes and then lost the rest of the country because he only won it by 286,000 votes.
Okay, thanks, Larry. Professor?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. Maine and Nebraska, I believe, have that kind of a system that Larry is calling for. The problem with that is, if you have that kind of system, then the Electoral College, you have the potential for it to be more fragmented, the vote to be more fragmented. And what that could do is throw more elections into the House. And again, if you look at the history of elections thrown in the House, Catherine, it's not a very pleasant history.
I want to talk for a minute about the legitimacy of a Bush administration, mm-hmm. if there is one. Just reflecting on some of the things you've said, it sounds like, and especially considering the tone of some of the calls we've taken just in the last half an hour, mm-hmm. It sounds like the only way that Bush would be able to get real legitimacy would be if Al Gore gave him that legitimacy. We keep talking about how he should concede. It's almost as if there's more pressure on Al Gore to decide the future of the country, which he could if he conceded.
Yeah, I think that's a really very good point, I think. I think that the only way to put a decent end, can I put it that way, to this election is if one of the candidates steps forward and concedes. And it looks now like that responsibility falls on Al Gore unless something dramatic happens in the hand counts, and indeed.
So talk for a minute about the timing, because he has these court challenges, even if there are these poll snapshots that show that, you know, for a moment in time, there are people who think he should concede. His hands are tied for at least the week, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yeah, I think, and you know, part of this responsibility falls on the Bush people. They keep saying the game's up, but they've got this suit before the Supreme Court. I mean, they're hedging their bets just in case Al Gore wins his challenges in the Florida state court. So I think Al Gore is in an extremely difficult situation, and as you point out, it's not all of his making. Part of it relates to the ticking clock, and part of it relates, as he's indicated, that the Republicans very effectively have challenged him at every step of the way and have contributed, certainly, to the protracted nature of this struggle, and haven't taken the same responsibility that he's taken for it.
Let's go to Jonathan in St. Louis Park. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you, Catherine.
Hi.
I'm very optimistic right now. You were kind of casting the question earlier about whether it will be the courts or whether it will be the parties or whether it will be the people. And I know that, in general, in life, people don't learn important things until they get put in a tough situation. And the whole country has kind of gone through a ringer, and we've learned a lot. We've learned about how votes should be done. We learned about personal responsibility. You know, people aren't going to be careless when they go to the polls. They're going to make sure that they vote correctly. But I think the main optimism that I have is that people are going to eventually, I think, persuade Al Gore that he does need to concede, especially if people are willing to face the facts. And what I mean by that, and this has been alluded to very little, Al Gore isn't really asking for a count of all the Florida votes. He's asking for votes to be manually recounted in the counties that are most likely to give him more votes. He is allowing votes in many large Republican-dominated counties to not be recounted. So I think we really need to question his honesty, and I think we do need to ask him to concede now.
I think that's an interesting point, Jonathan. You know, I from the beginning, I was hoping that Bush and Gore and their supporters would get together and agree to have a hand count of all the counties in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
which, by the way, Al Gore did offer.
He did offer, and I was hoping that would be a resolution, and Governor Bush refused to do that. And this goes back to an earlier caller, and perhaps because he was afraid he was going to lose. And I think most of the discrepancies are in the Democratic counties.
Are there other factors here, however? You can't help but wonder, the long-standing enmity between the Bush and Clinton-Gore folks. I mean, it's just hard to see these two camps ever sitting down to talk about anything.
Yeah, you know, that's I've been describing this election as the sequel to the impeachment debacle
mm-hmm.
we experienced, and a lot of people hoped that this election would sort of present us with a clean slate and we could get beyond that very, very bitter partisan slash constitutional struggle. But I think, Catherine, this election is emerging as the sequel to it, and I think the next presidency will, if you can continue a sequel, will extend that sequel. I think we're going to have very, very, very bitter partisan relations in the Beltway and continued estrangement, I think, among the people from the parties in Washington outside of the Beltway.
Let's go to Bill in Minnetonka. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning, Catherine, Cindy. Thank you for taking my call. One of the things that I keep hearing is that every single vote should be counted. And of course, you're talking about whether it's machine or hand-counted. As far as every single vote counted, I don't believe that has ever happened. I don't believe that ever will happen. There are millions of undervotes throughout this country that are not counted. And we're on exactly the slippery slope that Jim Baker originally talked about, that there is no finality to this. We could go on ad infinitum with it. Another question was, why is Bush afraid to go through this recount? I think the reason is, if you look at what went on in Broward County and the manufacturing of votes in Broward County, the dimples, the pimples, the scratches, and whatever, that's why. One other issue you had mentioned about Bush's legitimacy and that Gore may have to help him get that. If there was a recent poll that was just issued that right now 84% of the American people would accept Bush as president.
Now, where are you getting that poll? 84%.
That was on the news this morning. One of the networks. I'm not sure which one it was, Catherine.
That's awfully high.
That sounds
yes.
high. I want to address briefly Bill's first point about whether or not we can determine who won this election. Because it's so close, Catherine, it really is. It is almost impossible. One would wish one could call this a tie, and that we had a clear tiebreaker here. You know, there's a certain amount of randomness and accident in every election, but they're usually not this close. And when it is this close, it becomes extremely difficult to determine who's going to win it. And that's why I kind of think it's as much as I'm worried about it, this institutionally, I kind of think it's going to have to fall to the courts to put, if I can put it so, kind of an artificial end to an election that doesn't have any clear, definitive resolution in the counting of the votes.
I'm just looking through some things here. There was an ABC Washington Post poll that said that 8 in 10 would accept Bush as legitimately mm-hmm. elected.
Yeah.
6 in 10 said they would accept Gore as legitimately
yeah,
elected.
Yeah, that goes back to what I said before, is that Bush supporters are willing, more Gore supporters are willing to accept Bush than the other way around.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go to Vicki in Minneapolis. Vicki, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. Thanks
Hi.
For taking my call.
Yeah.
My question is, if the law in Florida allows for these recounts, why doesn't the law allow sufficient time to handle recounting? Why are these shortened
yeah.
times enforced?
Yeah. Vicki, I wish I was an expert on Florida politics in light of what's happened in this election. I'm sure not. But, you know, a lot of people, I heard a lot of Bush supporters last night on TV denouncing the Florida courts as being political and this that. What they're really trying to do, I think, Vicki, is to deal with two contradictory statutes, one that allows for a recount, another which sets a deadline of November 12th. And that's what the ruling they came up with was a compromise, that they were going to allow the recounts to go on beyond November 12th, but they were going to put some limit on how long those things could go on because of the ticking clock of the Electoral College. But I think you make a very good point that Florida's got to straighten out their legal situation down there, because indeed you point to an important contradiction.
We're talking to Sidney Milkus. He's a professor of government and a senior scholar at the Miller Center of Public Affairs at the University of Virginia. He's also co-author of the book Presidential Greatness. Our lines are full right now, but if you take down these numbers, maybe you can hop on in just a minute or so when the lines free up. It's 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Let's go to Jackie in Minneapolis. Jackie, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, Catherine. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I guess I would just like to say that, you know, in our schools, we teach our children that we live in a democracy. And why are all of a sudden we are in such a hurry that we don't have time to count what's really important? Every vote should count. And also, I wanted to ask you two questions. Isn't it true that Bush signed a law in Texas stating that hand counts were better than machine counts and spelled out exactly how they should determine the intent of the voter? And also, one other thing, didn't he also have hand counts in about six counties that netted him over 400 votes? And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jackie.
I don't know about the second question. I didn't follow that and can't answer that. But it is true that Texas has a law providing for a recount. I don't know whether they have.
I just want to point out, however, that the way some of this information gets disseminated, I'm almost willing to bet that Jackie got an email or something. Jackie, are you still there? Okay, she's moved on.
Yeah.
But notice that she asked you if he signed a law that said that hand counts are better. Now, that's not the law he signed.
That. Yeah, I think providing for a hand count, there certainly is. A lot of states have laws that provide for that. Now, how many of them provide strict timelines and so forth? That I can't answer that question. But it is true Texas provides a hand count. But it points to the bigger issue of whether every vote should count and how we best do that. And I have three children, so I take Jackie's point to heart.
Mm-hmm.
But when I talk to my children, two of whom are teenagers this morning, this is the first election they followed kind of substantively. They really kind of know what's going on. They're completely estranged from this. They're tired of seeing lawyers. They're tired of seeing pundits argue about whether or not a dimple should count. And I think, again, Catherine, that's the problem here. It's almost a metaphysical question as to how these votes should be counted, whether or not a dimple should be counted for Al Gore or George Bush. I mean, then you have to get into what the intention of the voter is. And then, so it's not such a simple question. It's not so simply the principle of every vote should count. There's real doubt here about how to count some of these votes.
Let's go to John in Minneapolis. John, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi.
Hi.
My point was, I think Al Gore did win in Florida, and what if we discover that fact after he concedes to Bush? I mean, if those votes in Seminole County were simply thrown out, I think that would give him the margin of victory. And what if that happened after he conceded? That would certainly throw a cloud over Bush's presidency.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that point, John. I sort of doubt that anything that definitive is going to be proven. But I certainly think that Al Gore could make a case that he won Florida. The problem is that a lot of people who intended to vote for him voted for Pat Buchanan because of this butterfly ballot. And I still think that's where this election was lost. A local Democratic official certified a ballot that was very, very detrimental to Al Gore's presidential candidacy.
Let's go to Dave in Bemidji. Dave, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
If I understand correctly, Al Gore is saying that every vote should be counted, and that's the whole basis for him not dropping out. But I also understand that the Democrats in Florida have blocked a lot of absentee votes. How can Al expect to have it both ways?
Well, I think the blocking of the absentee ballots has to do with Florida state law, which requires that they be postmarked, and a number of votes were blocked that were not postmarked. And there's good rules, reason, Catherine, for some of these regulations, because in the past there's been some real irregularities with absentee ballots. These are the kind of ballots that are really vulnerable to fraud.
Well, especially in Miami, for instance.
Well, I'm not going to. You'll get. I'll be getting emails from Miami if I agree with you there. So
well,
say
no, but,
the, in Miami.
But there was a mayoral candidate ousted because he was accused of.
And because of that, Florida in particular has focused on tightening up the rules by which absentee ballots are counted. So,
But getting to Dave's
point, I noted that the Bush administration is not really carrying on that suit.
to try to get those votes counted.
Well, but you have to at least, I mean, it strikes me that you can accuse both sides of only caring about the rules in particular situations.
I think that's absolutely right.
The Bush campaign says every vote must count, and they waive absentee ballots from service people, and the Gore people say every vote must count when they look at dimpled ballots.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think neither side here is transcending their self-interest and their ambition, and I don't know how much we should expect them to.
Oh, really? So are they? You don't at least hope for?
Oh, I do. Hope, of course, I hope.
Yes.
I do hope for that. And you know what? What makes me hope is because there's something called enlightened self-interest,
mm-hmm.
and I do think, again, except with if unless something unforeseen happens with respect to these hand counts. I do think it's in the self-interest, the enlightened self-interest of Al Gore, his long-run self-interest, and certainly the Democratic Party, after maybe another week of this, if nothing changes, to concede. And I think that would put Al Gore in good position to continue his political career. I think it would put the Democratic Party in a very good position for the elections of 2002.
Is it surprising to you that there isn't already some Democratic maneuvering around with people's eyes? You know, there aren't Congress people with thinking of their own scalps and an election 2 years from now?
It sure is. Yeah, I would have expected a little more peeling off, and I've been rather surprised at how the Democrats have stuck together. There has been, around the edges, some dissent. I note Bob Reich, former Secretary of Labor, today said Al Gore should concede, but at the core of the Democratic Party, there's been very, very strong on support of Al Gore's challenges, and I think that just shows how deeply split the parties are right now, and how unwilling they are to compromise with the opposition.
You know, we're getting down to about a minute left here. Tell me what you think we're going to see in the week ahead. What should we be looking out for?
Yeah, political historians are horrible predictors, Catherine. But what I suspect will happen is the Supreme Court, and I'm just guessing here because I'm not a lawyer, will not overrule the Florida Supreme Court, that they'll be reluctant to get into this mess.
Uh-oh.
And then I think it's going to have to be played out in Florida. And I sort of suspect that the Florida Supreme Court will turn down Al Gore's challenges. And then after about a week or a week and a half, then Al Gore will have to give up the ghost. But I must say that I say that without a heck of a lot of confidence. One of the things that we've learned from this election is not to make predictions. Because the only thing we can predict is unpredictability.
Well, you did pretty well there. All right, we're down to seconds. Do you think that the American people would accept a presidential decision based on the court or the legislature of one state?
I think that would be more problematic. And that's the only reason I sort of hope that the Supreme Court would step in here. I guess we're out of time.
Yeah, we are. Sydney Milkus, I want to thank you for joining us today.
It's been a whole lot of fun for me, and thanks for having me.
Okay. Sydney Milkus is a professor of government, and he's a senior scholar at the Miller Center of Public Affairs at the University of Virginia. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Care 11, host of Care11.com. 24-hour access to updated weather, radar, news, and traffic information. Care11.com.
Use your Minnesota Public Radio membership to get a discount on tickets to The Pavilion, a new play by Craig Wright at the Jungle Theater. It's a warm, poignant tale of redemption and acceptance running now through January 7th. For tickets and information,